We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crowe, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy hump day to you. And it is a hump day Wednesday, November 20 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off live on 103.7 The Game. Yours truly, Ben Love, joined by the famous Clint D. And for the next 2 hours, we got you, bringing you home and over the hump in this work week from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Some great guests coming up today on LSU basketball, LSU football. We'll get with a former STM Cougar that's playing football in Lake Charles, but I must begin, as seems ceremonial at this point. The College Football Playoff Committee has released their third batch of rankings, and again, as a faithful cog in the machine, I will opine. I'll give my thoughts on LSU remaining at the top, Ohio State potentially closing the gap, what the Buckeyes have ahead of them, and the message that is or maybe isn't sent by Bama staying exactly where they are despite the injury to Tua. I'll lead with those topics, and I'll take your phone calls on them. 706-0111. Tigers remain at the top, and I don't think that there was ever much doubt for me. I think that if Ohio State is to leapfrog LSU, that may not happen until the final batch of these rankings are released. Now, you're going to ask me, how's that possible? LSU's toughest games, with the exception of that tilt against Georgia in Atlanta, they're behind Ed Orgeron and the Tigers. And unfortunately, sometimes humans, as opposed to computers and robots, can fall victim to what have you done for me lately syndrome. And they get swept up in the biggest wins most recently. And what is true is that if Ohio State wins out, the Buckeyes would own wins over then number 19 Cincinnati, then number 12 Wisconsin, and then the three games that are immediately ahead of the Ohio State University. It's number 8 Penn State this weekend, number 13, Michigan, Thanksgiving weekend, and then you would imagine a Minnesota or Whiskey rematch that's against the top 10 or 12 team. So here's my point to you. As we continue to dissect way too early, LSU deserves to be ahead of Ohio State now. It will be a closer heat, I think, by the time we get to the end of the college football regular season and then the conference championship weekend. There's only one thing, in my opinion, that definitively, there's that word, keeps LSU ahead of Ohio State if both went out. And that is if LSU dog pounds the you-know-what out of the dogs in Atlanta. If that happens and LSU's able to put that type of exclamation point on a 13-0 regular season with all the quality wins that LSU had, even if most of theirs came early November and prior, I think the Tigers keep the number one spot. But what we saw yesterday, well, as I told you on yesterday's edition of B2BS, it doesn't surprise me. As for the rest of the rankings, here's what jumps off the page to me. Bama loses Tua and yet remains at 5. I hate to go too far down this devil's advocate path, and for one reason. If Oregon or Utah, most likely Oregon, I'd imagine, had jumped Bama, a lot of us would be crying out, well, wait a minute, the Pac-12 is horrible. How could that be? They've got a loss, right? Oregon's got a loss. They lost to Auburn. How is that worse than Bama losing to LSU? And so I see how we would play this thing on one side of the fence or the other, no matter which way it landed. But here's what I will tell you. For anybody that watched those rankings come down last night, and of course it's still LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, 1, 2, 3, 4. But it's Bama 5 over Oregon 6. And if that gave you any type of cause to just lose it for a minute, let me alleviate that. Just about every major clearinghouse for gambling every single bookie that's legal has Alabama at worse odds to make the college football playoffs now than with Tua some 4 or 5 days ago. And some of them drastically. Bama, before the Mississippi State game, I think this was Westgate, I can't remember exactly, so excuse me, it's not in front of me, but one of the ranking systems I saw on Monday had Bama at about 6-1 maybe to get to the college football playoffs before the Mississippi State game. And that same prognosticating group had it at 30-1 after the Tua injury. Whoa. Did Bama's chances of beating Auburn go down that much? Maybe, but I think that's more about what that's going to do to the perceived eyeball test. So the biggest thing I will tell you that I took away from these rankings is that the committee right now is going to give Bama props, a team that's been to the national title game however many years in a row that it's been. They're going to allow that team benefit of the doubt for the time being. I would bet a lot of money at this point that it's going to be the Pac-12 winner or LSU and Georgia, if the Dogs win in Atlanta, that stay ahead of Alabama. I still feel very confident about that. Nothing I saw yesterday changed my opinion on that. A few other things that jump off the page. The Big 12, not a lot of respect. Oklahoma at 9, no real movement there for the Sooners, not that they should have, and Baylor with the loss outside of the top 10. Minnesota, with a narrow loss to Iowa, stayed in the top 10. They didn't duck back far at all. The Gophers were at 8 before the loss to Kirk Ferentz in Iowa. Now they're at 10. And so that gives you Minnesota at 10, Penn State at 8, and Ohio State at 2. And so there's still a lot of love for the Big 10 via the selection committee. Big 12, not so much. Pac-12, yeah. I mean, they're hanging tough. They're right where they need to be in order to have that chance if Oregon, especially of those two, runs the table and then wins the Pac-12 Conference Championship. So some of my initial thoughts. LSU's at 1. The Tigers have the most top 25 wins in the country. They've got 4. In fact, all 4 of those were over top 10 teams at the time. But if we were to play that same game using those same metrics, top 25 wins, LSU's got 4 of them. Ohio State's got 2 of them. Clemson's got 1. Georgia has 3. But obviously the loss to South Carolina for Georgia looks uglier than Bama losing to LSU, than Oregon losing to Auburn. And so I think we kind of start to see the trend a little bit. These top 25, these top 10 wins, these quality wins are going to keep buoying teams. Right now it's got LSU ahead of Ohio State. It might level the playing field between the two, and it could put the Buckeyes over the top if both are undefeated in early December. Only exception, as I told you, LSU smashes Georgia and puts a big-time cherry on top of a 13-0 season. So some of the biggest takeaways for me now that we've got 3 editions of the college football playoff rankings. All right, a big show today. I teased our guest list. Now I let it and that cat out of the bag. On the other side of this break, we've got a sink or swim question. At 4:30, we've got Cody Warsham. LSU Sports to look back at LSU's win last night over UMBC and what's next for Will Wade and the Basketball Tigers. Haven't really had a proper introduction to LSU hoops for this season on the program. We're going to make amends for that. And even in the midst of Gridiron Mania, Cody Warsham will join us to talk hoops at 4:30. At 5:15, Scott Rabelais, columnist for The Advocate, his thoughts on LSU football, as well as these same rankings that I just poured over. And excited at 5:30 to welcome back on the program Trevor Beggy, junior wide receiver for the Miami State Cowboys, having a big season over in Lake Charles. And, of course, a former STM Cougar. We'll ask him about those pokes in the chuck. And then also St. Thomas More Evangel this weekend. We'll let him preview that and just how much of a freak Jack Besh is. So excited about our lineup today. Excited to have you with us. On the other side of this timeout, we'll be back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
That's fancy timing from the fancy voice guy there. Sink or swim. That's what we do this time of day. That's exactly what we'll do right now. And I'm going to take it to the NFL. I want to ask about the remainder of the Saints season. I know today will be a little more college football heavy. Don't forget Cody Warsham coming aboard in about 13 or 14 minutes. Will be college basketball heavy there. And so let's fit the Saints in while we can and take a look at the remaining six games of this regular season. I think it's going to take at least four wins out of the next six to feel comfortable about getting a bye. I think it's going to take five out of the next six to feel comfortable about maybe having the number one overall seed and, like last year, home field advantage. And so just how many wins will they get? Well, now I'm putting the cart ahead of the horse. Let's play the music, Clint. Then officially, I'll ask the question.
Love, exciting and new.
Your sink or swim question of the day: how many wins will the Saints fetch in their final six regular season games? I'll give you the rundown, and then I want you to call us up. The Saints have six remaining. As I mentioned, they're at 8-2 right now, and we know that it's back home, Carolina, this Sunday at noon. Following that, at the Falcons, Thanksgiving Thursday, so short rest, go to the ATL. Then you've got extended rest before you come home and start December. At home against the 49ers, you stay home against the Colts. You've got the Titans on the road and the Panthers on the road December 22nd and 29th. And so those are your six games remaining. Three in the dome, three on the road. My question to you is, how many will the Saints win? Call us up and let us know. 706-0111. Clint, it's a football question, but here's some baseball speak. Lead us off.
You know, I got to go with the Saints. I think they have every chance to go 5-1. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that you're going to be playing a really decent schedule to kind of have that tail end of it. We talked about it at the beginning of the year. I feel like the only tough game to pick is maybe that Saints matchup. We know the Falcons game. You know, we know the Saints are going to be up for that one on Thanksgiving night after the way that game went 2 weeks ago. I think the Saints team is going to wind up going 5-1 with that one loss, more likely than not being to the San Francisco 49ers. But if they win that, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they pull the starters in week 17 and then you see them lose to the Panthers, a lot like what they did last year, because of the fact they'll have that bye week secure.
I think the answer here is either 4 or 5. 6 is unrealistic to expect, but certainly not impossible. A team that won 7 straight games looked like a runaway freight train until the debacle against the Falcons 2 weeks ago. And you look at the Saints' two losses this year. On the road at the Rams, where Breeze is hurt in the first half. That one's easy enough to explain away. The Falcons game is hard to explain. And that's the only thing that reminds you it could happen any given Sunday if you're not right for whatever reason. And so I'm going to take 6-0 off the table. I think they win these next two games, CD. And so, yeah, I would have told you that at the Falcons, short rest on Thursday would have been a tough one. But losing to them 2 weeks ago is almost a blessing in disguise for the rematch. I know that in the pros, they don't have the revenge factor quite to the same level than in high school or college, but I think they'll have something for Atlanta in that ball game. I think they win the next two. Something tells me that they slip once in the final four games. So, Clint, I'm going to answer 5-1. I think the Saints win 5 of their final 6 games. They finish the season at 3. I don't think the one they lose is week 17 at Carolina. I think they'll be playing full tilt all season long. I think they're going to have to keep it going because they lose the game before week 17. So my answer is 5. Let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Scotty, thanks for waiting on us there. How many games do the Saints win out of the next 6?
I'm going to agree with that assessment and say 5. And I think the 49er one is critical if we're going to get, home field throughout.
It's critical, especially if San Francisco drops one this week. I appreciate the call.
Thanks, sir.
Yes, sir. And look, here's the thing. We'll take some more at 706-0111. But San Francisco this week, I think I'm going to agree with Sharif Ishak of WDSU, who joined us on the program yesterday. Saints are probably better off if the Niners beat the Packers in Sunday Night Football this week, right? Knock the pack even further back. On the same token, Saints fans would probably be best suited to root for Philly to beat Seattle this weekend. Because then you take Seattle at 8-2 and make them a three-loss team. Then you take the Packers at 8-2, make them a three-loss team. I think that's the type of playoff seeding Russian roulette you want to play if you're the Saints. Because you'll take your chances. As Clint and I mentioned, as Scotty referenced, with that Niners game at home, you win that one, then all of a sudden, you've got a real opportunity to be the number one seed if you have the head-to-head over the 49ers. So we've got some time for more here. How many of the next six games in the regular season will the Saints win? Now, if I'm attempting to drill down even further, Clint, and I'm trying to figure out, all right, what game could be the slip-up? Right? If I don't think that it's Carolina on the road in Week 17, then who is it going to be? The tough thing about predicting that 49ers game is a loss, you really think the Saints are going to lose in the Dome? I know that's not a primetime game. Right now, I believe, scheduled for Sunday at noon on December the 8th. But the Saints losing in the Dome for a big game where they're hyped up, I mean, it hasn't happened since, I hate to remind you of this, the NFC Championship game. That Falcons game 2 weeks ago was not a big game. They haven't lost a big game in a big atmosphere in that building in a long, long time. It feels like maybe the Falcons Thanksgiving night, although I told you that's not the one I'd pick, or possibly at the Titans on December 22nd. That actually is a short rest game. I forget that the Saints are taking on the Colts Monday Night Football in the Dome. And so then fairly short rest going to Tennessee. I know the Titans are not God's gift to the NFL this year, but something tells me a game away from home, there might be a better opportunity. Or, I guess, if we're looking at it from a Saints perspective, a worse opportunity to win the game. Let's get back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Al, how many out of the next six do the Saints win?
We're looking at it from a Saints perspective.
All right, Al, turn me down and we'll turn you up. How many of the next? All right, we lost Al. Live radio is fun. Let's go back to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Dusty, let's try this one on for size.
Man, I think, like you said, our blessings will be a blessing in disguise with the injuries. I think we're going to go 6-6 because normally around this time is when Breeze starts getting tired. He's already well-rested, and Alvin Kamara is rested from the injury. And even if we would pull our starters at the end of the season, if we secure it, man, both of our backup quarterback and running back got plenty of war time in them right now.
And Carolina this year won't quite be like Carolina last year. I'm going to expound on that as well. Thank you, Dusty.
All right.
Carolina with Kyle Allen fading and declining, which I think is a real possibility based on what we saw last week. Saints on the road in Charlotte for that ball game would have a real opportunity to stamp home a fantastic regular season. And could you imagine 14-2? I mean, that might be the loudest statement yet that this Saints team is ready to take that next step. I mean, it was Minnesota, divisional round 2 years ago, Rams, conference title game last year, getting back to the Super Bowl, back to Miami 10 years from the last time they won it. 14-2 would make a loud statement that that's exactly where this team believes they are heading. I will take one more, and then we'll take it to a break. Keith is waiting for us aboard the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Keith, how many games?
What's up, my brother? Yeah, I say we win four and we lose two. I'm really not looking forward to that Indianapolis game. Jacoby Brissett is back. He's a pretty good quarterback back there with Indy. And San Francisco's defense is going to give us the top predict. But I think we should be good to go for all the rest. So I'll put me down for 4-2 remainder schedule.
There we go. Keith, great to hear from you. So here's our consensus, 4-6. That's our range. And typically on Sports Talk Radio, that would be considered pie in the sky. But I don't think it is for this Saints team. Not the one that won 7 in a row, 5 of them with a backup quarterback. Not for a team that's been as I think we could say dominant. That's fair, isn't it? Not always playoff dominant, but a team that's been this good when it matters in the regular season to get to home field advantage last year. They're on that path this year. I don't think that's unrealistic to suggest the Saints are going to finish somewhere between 12-4 and 14-2. If they're 14-2, they will be the number one overall seed because they'll have beaten the 49ers. If they're 13-3, they'll be one of the top two seeds. Could have to sweat out the number one overall. If they're 12-4, however, that's where it could get dicey. Because with all those teams I just mentioned to you, and the possibility of Minnesota maybe getting hot even, all of those teams with a chance to have four or fewer losses, if the Saints are at 12-4, outside chance that they're hosting a wild card game in New Orleans. Right, we are halfway home with our 4 o'clock hour. Going to switch it up. Talk LSU basketball on the other side with our guy, Cody Warsham. And after this brief timeout, that's exactly what you'll get with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Beats Williams again, kicks it over to Day's right side. He goes strong to the basket. Layup is good. Another whistle, another foul, and another and-one opportunity for Darius Day's, the sophomore out of Raleigh, Florida.
Darius Day's one of two Tigers last night to author a double-double inside the PMAC, LSU over UMBC, and they're now 3-1 on this regular season. To discuss it and more, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Time to catch up with Cody Warsham. He is the digital media reporter for LSU Sports. Cody, great to talk hoops with you again, man. How are you?
I'm good, Ben. It's basketball season. It's football season. It's the best time of year.
We just heard a nice and-one opportunity for Darius Day's. I mentioned the double-double. Played 21 minutes last night. What are you seeing out of him that feels different from his freshman season to this year? And I'm getting word we lost Cody Warsham. So he was so excited about basketball season that Verizon or AT&T dropped his call. We'll get him back aboard, and we'll keep this train rolling. So Tigers last night, as I was alluding to, 77-50 winners. Days had a double-double. The freshman, Trendon Watford, five-star from Alabama, had a double-double. And how about Charles Manning Jr., 16 points, a season high, as he looked awfully good in 22 minutes off the bench. So we'll see if we can't get Cody back. Want to discuss that and start to look ahead at the remainder of LSU's non-conference schedule. Cody, I know we got you back. I mentioned Days with a double-double. Where has he improved into this season?
Well, Ben, I think the biggest improvement is in the minutes that he's getting. Darius, if you look at his numbers last year, he was the most efficient offensive player for LSU offensively in the last 25 years in terms of offensive rating. Just, he's so efficient. He gets so many offensive rebounds. He knocks down three-pointers. He doesn't turn the ball over. So given opportunity, he's going to produce. I think the biggest area he's improved, he's in better shape. So you can play him more minutes. I think defensively he's better. There were times last year where he just had that freshman learning curve defensively. And those two things keep him on the floor. When he's on the floor, he's going to produce. So I've always loved Darius Day's. I said last year, people looked at me like I was crazy, and I might be a little crazy. But I said, look, this guy has, like, SEC Player of the Year potential if he sticks around for 4 years. Because by the time he's a senior, he's not a guy that leaves early. He could be an absolute monster. And you're seeing kind of the early signs of that development. He's a double-double. He's back-to-back games. He's going to get you a bunch of rebounds. He's going to be efficient scoring. I think the biggest thing last night, and Will Wade touched on it, he was able to produce without being hot from the field. You know, he didn't make a three-pointer. I think he was 0-5. Last year, that would have affected him. This year, he knows he's got a job to do. The shots will fall. The shots will miss. You know, that'll vary with game to game. But he's got constants in terms of the glass and an effort and intensity that he can bring every night. And I think he's learned that.
You got to have program players. I'm right there with you. Darius Day's could be one of LSU's best in a while. In the backcourt, familiar names from Baton Rouge, Skylar Mays, the senior, Javonte Smart, the sophomore. They played occasionally last year, Cody, without Trey Waters due to injury. The Tennessee game in Baton Rouge, I think, jumps out to everybody's mind. But now that they're doing it every single game, how are they cohabitating together?
Still learning. I think Javonte's still getting used to that that role again. You know, last year he could feed off of Tremont Waters so much. This year he's still learning to dictate and to pull the strings. You know, he's got all the talent in the world. He's got the handles and he's got the ability to penetrate and create for others in the passing and the shooting and all that stuff. Even though he hadn't shot it the way that he wants to this year, that'll come. I think it's just more about the rhythm, the tempo, the steering of the ship. You know, I think of a specific moment last night. He's bringing the ball up the court on the right side. Skylar Mays, you know, typically the two guard runs to a corner, the other three men runs to another corner or wing. Skylar was just a little bit slow getting there. I think he may have even gotten the rebound or chased down a rebound. And he was trying to clear out to the corner, and Javonte just kind of saw him and reversed it to him really quick, and Skylar didn't want the ball there. It wasn't part of the offense. It wasn't part of the flow. And Skylar just kind of looked at him like, settle down. And I think that's the biggest thing for Javonte right now. He's just got to settle down, get back into that rhythm of being a point guard and being the floor general. And I think he'll get there because he's got all the talent in the world. And Skylar, you know, he's picked up right where he left off last year. I mean, he's so efficient. I was looking at his numbers, and it's early and small sample size. He's getting two-thirds of his shots right now at the rim. I mean, that's – like, if you're a post player and you're getting two-thirds of your shots at the rim, that's impressive. I mean, he is just – he's getting to the rim at will. The three-point shot is still kind of not falling for him. I think it'll get better. But he just gets to the rim whenever he wants to, and then he finishes at the rim. And so when you've got that at your two guard, it's really going to make your offense go. And so I think Scott is just going to live at the rim this year and have another really efficient season.
Talking LSU basketball with Cody Warsham, and that is a beautiful thing. Glad he's with us on 103.7 The Game. Let's get to Charles Manning next. And the 6'5 junior, 16 points last night. Cody, this guy was an NJCAA All-American last year. How consistent of a performer do you suspect he can be for Will Wade?
Well, I think he's going to bring some things every night, super consistent in terms of defensively what he provides. I mean, Ben, he's the team's leading shot blocker right now. Like, he's getting two blocks a game, and a lot of them are on contests. You know, he's so long, he's so quick. He closes down shooters, and they think they've got a window to shoot through, and they don't. He just sends it back in their face. So I think defensively, every night he's going to be a guy that you can put on the best perimeter scorer for the other team, and he can shut them down. You know, I mean, I think at times he got put on the 5'2 kid last night from UMBC that was averaging 16, 17 points a game. And I know there were highlight videos of that kid going around the internet today. But he struggled. You know, he didn't score for the first half, and other than like a little 2-minute stretch in the second half, he wasn't very effective offensively, and Charles is a big part of that. So defensively, he's going to help you every night. He's going to, you know, get steals and be in passing lanes. And then offensively, he's efficient. You know, he's not going to be your leading scorer every game, but when he needs to go create a shot, he can. When he needs to knock down an open shot, he can. When he needs to get out and run in transition, he can. So Will Wade loves him. He says he contributes to winning in just so many ways, and you're seeing that early in his career.
Tigers give up only 50 last night, Cody. That's their best defensive performance so far in four games this season. They're going to need that. They got number 15 Utah State undefeated out of the Mountain West coming in Friday. How are they going to test this Tigers defense?
Well, Will Wade talked about it after the game last night. He said, you know, first of all, he thinks they're a potential Final Four team. He thinks they're that good. I think Utah State's ranked like 15th in the country right now, and he thinks they're underrated. I don't know their personnel very well. I know they got one guard who's a potential All-American type of player. That's going to be an absolute handful for them. But they run great offense. They run the kind of offense that Will Wade wants LSU to run. It's emotion. It's hard cuts, hard screens. They run it the right way. They're well coached. It's going to be a tough matchup for LSU, who, you know, last night I saw some things defensively in LSU. I don't know if they're going to end up being a good defensive team or not, but the ingredients are there for them to be a really versatile, switchy defense. You can really switch 1 through 5. I mean, they can definitely switch 1 through 4, and they were last night. And if Emmet Williams, if you trust him on some guards, you can switch 1 through 5 with that lineup of Days and Williams and Watford all out there on the floor. You throw Manning in there too, he can guard all 5 positions. You got a chance to be versatile defensively. You don't have the Cavell Bigby Williams type of rim protector. You don't have the Tremont Waters type of, you know, steal generator, although Skylar Mays is pretty good at getting steals himself. But you do have a lot of guys who can guard guards, who can guard wings, and who can guard bigs. And so when you've got that kind of versatility, if you can coach that kind of defense, if they can learn that kind of defense, got a chance to be pretty good. And that's what they did to UMBC last night. They switched everything. They contested everything. I think UMBC was like 5 of 33 from 3, which is, I mean, just that's hard to do. That's how good LSU was defensively. So that was an encouraging sign for me. Utah State's a different monster offensively. But we'll see. LSU will certainly be put to the test.
The ways that LSU is different this year than last, Cody, in terms of composition and how Will Wade is having to coach to that difference.
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest thing defensively is you don't have that rim protector in Cavell that you could just funnel everything to. And so you've got to do some different things on the perimeter defensively. You have to contain the ball better. You probably can't be quite as aggressive in the passing lanes or kind of freelancing like Skylar Mays likes to do, like Tremont Waters love to do. You probably have to be a little bit more disciplined defensively. And then offensively, I think it's kind of similar to what I was just talking about defensively. Because you have so many versatile guys, you can run this four-out, you know, almost five-out at times motion that LSU's running. And right now, they're still learning it. They're still getting comfortable with it. It's not as dynamic right now as, you know, Tremont Waters' pick and roll was last year, which could, you know, present all kinds of highlights and incredible plays. But I think as the year grows on and they grow into it, it's going to be a harder offense to stop because you can't take away the set play. You can't double-team the ball screen and get it out of Tremont Waters' hands. Ideally, a motion offense is so democratic, it gets everybody involved, that, you know, you try to take one thing away, another thing opens up. So, to me, that's the biggest difference is you don't have the big defining players at the point in Tremont offensively and then Cavell at the five defensively, but you've got a lot of guys that can do a lot of things. And one through five, you know, everyone talks about LSU size. They're not big at the five, but one through five, one through four especially, they can be really big. And to me, that's kind of the making of a modern team. And I think it's gonna look kind of like a Houston Rockets type of team at their best, kind of like a Golden State Warriors at their best. Not to that level of execution, obviously, but the ability to be versatile and switch guys around, I think it's going to make LSU really good.
Cody, the next couple of LSU football games are at home. I'm sure you'll be happy to be off the road for a little while. Any chance you get to make that Jamaica road trip for LSU basketball?
No, I'm not going to Jamaica. So they left today. They're already on that trip, and I think they're going to be there for a week. So Kent Lowe is certainly going to come back tanner than ever. I'll be happy, though, like you mentioned. I'll be happy to be home for a little bit. December is going to be crazy. Hopefully it'll be crazy with LSU making a bunch of trips for football and a certain quarterback with a very good chance to go to New York City. So no Jamaica for me, but plenty of traveling in the future.
Are there bowling alleys in Jamaica?
If there aren't, you can bet that they're going to be building one for Kent Lowe, because when he comes to town, the pins have to come out. It's mandatory.
The man has to hit the boards. Cody, safe travels for the next month and a half for you, because I think you'll be making a lot of those trips you just referenced. Thanks for coming aboard.
Yeah, pray for me and pray for my wife.
There you go. That's right. Somebody's got to stay behind and do all that parenting while the award-winning Cody Worsham jet sets to write the stories and do all of the multimedia journalist stuff that we all love following. Again, that's Cody Worsham, LSUSports.net. I will tell you this before we hit a break, just to give you a little bit of an introduction, if you are familiar, a reintroduction to LSU's non-conference basketball schedule, because, frankly, there's one game I had forgotten. It's Utah State at home this Friday, and that is number 15, Utah State, 6 p.m. tip in the PMAC. Then it's going to be Rhode Island starts play over in Jamaica. That's November the 24th, so make that Sunday. After that, they've got a slew of fairly nondescript games, for them to be exact, at home. And then there's a game December the 21st at Staples Center against the USC Trojans. USC currently 5-0 on this young season. That's one I'd almost forgotten about. All that leads up to a January 4 SEC tip-off game at number 20, Tennessee. So it's going to start to get hot and heavy sooner than later. Let's head to our final break of the hour. When we return, I've got some news on not one but two LSU linebackers. I'll share that with you, and then we'll start to take your phone calls at 706-0111. Do not go anywhere. After a brief timeout, you've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports. But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
No debate here, just a couple of facts. One of them straight from the horse's mouth. When it comes to LSU football, and of course I'm talking about Ed Orgeron, one thing he told reporters yesterday, true freshman linebacker Dante Starks from John Aaron High School. You remember the guy that it took forever and a day for the NC2A to clear, happened right before the start of this season during fall camp. Starks returned to practice yesterday for the first time since October 16th. 6'1", 212-pounder. I mentioned he didn't get to campus until late. Technically wasn't even during fall camp, September the 4th. And that was because Starks needed to complete a few academic requirements. Now, yesterday, Starks did practice in a gold no-contact jersey, but we'll see if that doesn't maybe bolster this linebacking core that will be without Michael Divinity for the foreseeable future. And now that's got a little more definition to it. Again, this is a storyline that's kind of meandered a little bit this way, that way, over the course of this week. So let's set the record straight, everything we know, and then the things that we are hearing, and I think can kind of bank on at this point. What we know is this. Monday prior to the Bama game, Divinity posted, speaking of John Aaron linebackers, Michael Divinity posted on social media that he was leaving for personal reasons, had to step away and ask that people basically respect it. That's me paraphrasing what happened, oh, I don't know, some 16 days ago. On Monday of this week, Divinity returned to practice, although it was widely speculated he was not about to play anytime soon. And Ed Orgeron, on the SEC coaches teleconference today, he gave credence to that. In fact, he solidified something that Jordy Collada mentioned yesterday when Coach O and company joined Collada and T-Bob Hebert over on ESPN 104.5 in Baton Rouge. Orgeron said today maybe he will be eligible for that when it was asked if Divinity could return for a potential national championship game. Maybe he will be eligible for that. Up until then, Mike will not be eligible to play. And so there you go. And this would seem to back up everything that Glenn Gilbo made sure the program knew yesterday. If you missed it, I started my 4 o'clock hour, and I'll quote the kid at his words, personal reasons, personal issues, that's fine. It's not my job these days to go digging behind closet doors and try to find the skeletons, but that's something Glenn Gilbo has done for a long time, and I give him credit. Gilbo has reported for some time in the Daily Advertiser this was a suspension due to violation of team rules and not somebody that's leaving for personal reasons. And that seems to be even further backed up when yesterday Jacoby Stevens was quoted as saying that Divinity was suspended. Exact words out of Stevens' mouth. He was suspended, and then maybe it was the best thing that could have happened to his teammate as a wake-up call. So I guess I would sum it up for you like this. For whatever reasons, Orgeron and his staff have decided to handle first the Arden Key situation and then second the Michael Divinity situation the way that they have. And I think the reason is they don't want to blast the kids. I think that being allowed to leave, take care of whatever you did wrong to get suspended, to take care of whatever was afflicting you that's not going to allow you to be eligible to play, I think that they are doing a solid by these kids, but they're certainly not putting them on blast in the media. Not saying that there's anything wrong with the way Orgeron's handling that. He's actually been an incredibly transparent head coach by the standards of his predecessors. So, you know, it's interesting. It's one way of handling it. It leaves a lot of things open to speculation and interpretation, but the reality at this point is that Divinity will not be with LSU for the final two regular season games, for the SEC title game against Georgia, nor for any postseason game that may come before January 13 in New Orleans if LSU is to make it there. Now, you know what's funny? I got shouted down yesterday by somebody who lives in the area and roots for the Florida Gators. Number one, they know how I feel about their program. Number two, why are you living here? How did you get transplanted here if you love the Florida Gators? But I digress. The point is, I keep saying when LSU plays Georgia, yes, I recognize the fact that Georgia still has to take on Auburn this weekend on the Plains and then Texas A&M before the regular season is over. I recognize those things. I understand the fact that Georgia could still lose twice more, and then it would be Florida. And listen to me. Excuse me. Georgia's already beaten Auburn. So, no, I'm wrong. That was last week's problems. Clint, I'm going to throw a shade at myself early. That was something I was getting last week. Hold on now. Your Bulldogs could still lose. It could still be Florida. I think that is now mathematically impossible, right?
Yeah, I believe they already have clinched the SEC East. I remember the notification kind of popping up on Saturday afternoon. So I think that is official. You're going to see Georgia in the SEC, representing the SEC East.
I'm going to be transparent with you now. That was absolutely a brain fart on my part. I was losing track of last week versus this week. But it comes out of some pretty slick accidental shade there to my Florida Gators-loving fans. So just remember that you aren't allowed to go to Atlanta, and that settles that. Yeah, I feel good now. All right, let's finish this hour up with one final word.
What's up, Katie Anna? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Business. Raging Cajuns football. At 8-2, just take care of business. You got two games left here at home. Double-digit favorites already against the Troy Trojans. I know they've got good skill personnel, but if the Cajuns can take care of business there, the Saturday after Thanksgiving with ULM in town, I think there's a chance that they're taking on App State, not just for the Sun Belt Conference title, but for a spot in the top 25 prior to postseason play. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming back in. Scott Rabelais and Trevor Begge joining us in our next hour.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It is time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one. We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running and rolling into hour two of two. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports back in live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Glenn D for the next hour. A joyride, taking you home from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And we are blessed with guests in this hour. Coming up in about 12 minutes, Scott Rabelais of The Advocate, his take on the college football playoff rankings, Ed Ogeron and Dave Aranda. At 5:30, a former STM Cougar, now junior wide receiver for the McNeese State Cowboys, Trevor Begge, will come aboard. He's having a monster season in the Southland Conference for McNeese. But I want to lead this hour with some sound and kick some your way that you haven't heard yet on this show and on our station. I want to get you the latest from the selection committee chairman, Rob Mullins, of course, also the athletics director at Oregon. And he was asked a lot of questions about how Bama's seeding is and will be affected by Tua Tagovailoa's injury. I had my own thoughts on that. To begin the program, we'll go straight to the horse's mouth with Rob Mullins, and if we've got enough time left in this segment, I also want to play the latest earlier today from Sean Payton over in New Orleans as the Saints get ready for the Carolina Panthers. But first things first, it stayed the same way you saw it last week, 1 through 6. Let's just cut it off there. LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, 1 through 4. Bama stayed at 5, even after the injury to Tua, and Oregon remained at 6. And so Mullins was asked on Bama, did the Tide lose support from the committee after Tua's injury? Here's what he said.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of discussion in 4 through 6, obviously. And you're looking at those teams. Georgia, when you look again, they added to their resume with an impressive win at Auburn. And Oregon went on with an easy win against Arizona. So, you know, there's a lot of debate, a lot of discussion amongst all those teams.
And I'll tell you, my big, you know, rallying cry 2 weeks ago was how much I hate quality losses. And I thought we were going to start divvying those up and debating them. But there's something else that's become very obvious to me over the last 3 weeks. When Ohio State was 1 following week 1 of these rankings released, all we heard about was how dominant that the Buckeyes were against the competition they played. And I think you're going to hear some of that in this next soundbite. Mullins, he said that Tua's injury was part of the discussion, but the bigger one is that Bama got a quote-unquote convincing win.
Oh, it was certainly a part of the discussion. Obviously, we're aware of how the games unfold. We're aware of all the injuries, key injuries to players in the game. But again, for this week, we noticed that Alabama still carried on to a convincing win.
Convincing. Dominant. And that's a dangerous road, too, because all you could do is win the games that are on your schedule. I get that. I didn't like the idea of talking about losses you had that, in hindsight, are not bad losses. They're quote-unquote quality losses. But if we're going to start rewarding people for curb-stomping also-rans, that's not my favorite either. And so Bama going to Mississippi State and winning convincingly, he's saying that that's enough to keep them at five. Okay, I'm all right with that. But I don't think that Bama without Tua, which clearly won't have the same type of ammunition moving forward offensively, no offense meant to Mac Jones. There's just no way it's possible. I don't think that that Tide team is going to survive a potential 12-1 Pac-12 champ. I just don't. But we'll get one more from Tua. I'm sorry, from Rob Mullins on Tua. And he just flat out says it in this clip. Tua's injury didn't impact the rankings for Bama this week. Well, yeah, I would say that's obvious. They didn't budge.
Well, our job is to evaluate the games through week 12. And obviously we're aware of the injury to the quarterback late in the second quarter of last week's game. But Alabama continued on to a convincing win in that, so it didn't impact the rankings this week.
I still think that when push comes to shove, that's going to be a different story. Only if the Pac-12 makes it so. But my guess is if it's not Oregon, if it's not Utah, if Georgia beats LSU, both of those two teams are in. If LSU beats Georgia, then and maybe only then, possibility for Alabama. But some of that's going to depend as well on what happens with Oklahoma, what happens with Penn State and Minnesota. I still think it's very difficult to envision Alabama in these playoffs. So, again, you've heard my takes. We've had some of yours in the program. We just went straight to the horse's mouth with Rob Mullins. Moving along quickly. I told you we'd get some for Sean Payton if we had time. We got a little bit of meat on the bone. Here's Sean Payton talking about a guy that yesterday all of us pretty unanimously agreed is a top two or three running back in the game if he's not the best. Here's Payton on Christian McCaffrey.
I think it's really the opposite. I mean, in other words, I think he's their feature halfback, and maybe 2 years ago you saw him in a lot of different roles, and I think now, you know, you're. I mean, of course, he's a guy that has that versatility in the passing game, but man, he's on the field for, you know, close to 100% of the snaps, and so you're seeing him obviously as a runner and getting a lot of carries, and then also in the passing game.
So there's Payton on the straw that stirs every single, you know, I guess, volume-based inch. What's my liquid measure? You get what I'm saying. He stirs all the drink for the Carolina Panthers. His backfield mate, Kyle Allen, was doing pretty well, standing in place of Cam Newton for the first, say, month of his stint as a replacement, but things really started to go south in last week's loss. And so where's he at? We're going to see on Sunday, but here's the early prognosis from Sean Payton on where Kyle Allen's at and where he's playing.
Oh, listen, he made some big throws, and you know, certainly you have a chance to look at that film, but we've got so much film from this season, you know, that you're really seeing him in a starter's role, and that's kind of how we're approaching him.
A number of things that are different about the Carolina Panthers defense this year as compared to the last couple of years. The hardest thing to get used to is watching Thomas Davis play for anybody else. But you turn on that game Monday night in Mexico City, and there he is flying around for the L.A. Chargers. It's a very different look. And, yeah, they've changed some in that linebacking core. They've also had a change along the defensive line. Former Buck Gerald McCoy playing for these Panthers, don't forget. And Payton paid some homage to the way that McCoy changes the defense and changes the way you have to prepare for them.
You've got personnel that have changed, and then in their base package, you know, they're playing a lot of this Okie structure under defense, and so Gerald, you know, was playing in the three technique position. They lead the NFL in sacks. They're first in the NFL in getting to the quarterback. I mean, you can see that on film. And Mario Addison, Bruce Irvin, all these guys are playing at a high level. It's noticeably different.
Got to be honest. I didn't know that, Clint. I had not yet, I guess, been enlightened to that fact. That now the Carolina Panthers, everybody's 10 games into their playing season for the most part, that group leads the NFL in sacks. And so here you go. You've got two polar opposite tests in back-to-back weeks. Last week at Tampa, league's number one run defense. This week at home versus Carolina, league's top bunch of sack artists on defense. So that offensive line will be challenged, expecting again, I believe, to play without Andres Pete. All right, we're going to take our first break of the 5 o'clock hour, and then we'll get to the first of two consecutive guests. Should be a dynamite half hour or so of radio, so make sure you get your popcorn and buckle up. Scott Rabelais, when we return, and in about 19 minutes, former STM Cougar, now with the McNeese State Cowboys, Trevor Beggy is going to join the program. Stick around. After a brief timeout, we'll bounce right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in, and it's our pleasure to welcome aboard one of our favorite guests. We haven't had him here in a long time. Let's rectify that. Quickly, we'll get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline, and it is time to bring aboard Scott Rabelais, sports columnist for The Advocate. Scott, great to have you here. How are you today?
Hi, Ben. How are you?
It's been a while.
Things are going well here. I'll take your reaction to LSU remaining at number one in this week's college football playoff rankings and Alabama staying at number five.
I was a little bit surprised at first. I thought, given how, you know, how porous LSU's defense looked on Saturday against Ole Miss, I thought, you know, and Ohio State had an easy time with Rutgers, that LSU might slip to number two. But then when I saw the polls, the traditional polls, the AP poll and the coaches poll, and LSU really didn't, they lost maybe one number one vote, I thought, well, maybe they'll stay in there. Now, the polls, those polls have nothing to do with the CFP rankings, but that kind of can be a good indicator of where people are going to be ranked. And I think the committee, I did this mock selection thing in Dallas last year, as exercise, where they go through the process of, they put you in the committee room and they show you the process of selecting the teams for the final poll, the final rankings. And they're very, very thorough. And I think probably they saw that LSU, they said LSU still has a great resume, have a great offense. And Rutgers, the team Ohio State beat, would be a big underdog to Ole Miss, they say, like four touchdown underdogs. So LSU stayed there. Alabama staying there. They said last night, Rob Mullins, the chairman of the committee, on a teleconference, said they don't project how teams will do with or without certain players. They only look at the body of work to that point. And so to that point, they're still worthy of being the number five team. And I think they're taking a wait-and-see attitude with Alabama. I think they're going to see how they perform. I mean, this week is not much of an indicator. Obviously, they're playing like Western Carolina or something, how they play without Tua Tagovailoa. But certainly the Auburn game will be a big indicator. It'll be interesting to see if Alabama moves up or down, if they win that game or not. If they lose, they're definitely not in contention. But they're right there. But I still see them eventually getting jumped by a one-loss, Pac-12 or even the Big 12 champion.
I see it the exact same way, but I'll follow up on that point, Scott. It's been my observation over the years with NCAA basketball, they always handicap teams that have big injuries late in the season heading into the big dance, and they look at how they project without their star player. It could be fascinating with one of our first big case studies to see how that's handled in college football with the playoff.
Yeah, I think we all remember the Kenyon Martin situation with Cincinnati. They were going to be a number one regional seed, and I think that he got hurt and he broke his leg or something like that in the conference tournament. And they dropped into like a three and they lost. They were like one and done. Yeah, so there's that precedent for that. There's just not a whole lot of sample size for this with the college football playoff. This is only the sixth year of it. And certainly I don't think you've had a player the caliber of Tua Tagovailoa, you know, potential, you know, top five, you know, draft pick and certainly a Heisman candidate in his own right, getting hurt at like this point in the season, being as a player who's so vital to their team. So it's going to be interesting, but I think two more games with Mac Jones running the team as compared to Tua, you have a better idea of how they think they look, how they stack up and everyone else. Certainly for now, they feel like the eye test is pretty good, but Alabama's resume really is an anchor. I mean, even if they beat Auburn, that is going to be their one top 25 win. And, that doesn't stack up well to other teams, especially if you have two top 10 ranked Pac-10 teams playing each other for the title, or maybe two top 10 teams in Oklahoma and Baylor playing for the Big 12 title.
Continuing with Scott Rabelais, sports columnist for The Advocate, good enough to join us on 103.7 The Game. You've got a fascinating column that's up right now. Two things that Joe Burrow must do if he's going to maintain his grasp on the Heisman. Care to elaborate on that?
Well, sure. I mean, it's there's a lot of talk, and not to knock sports radio or sports talk shows, but there's a lot of talk out there. You know, who else could win? What scenario could keep Joe Burrow from winning the Heisman? He's a 1-20 favorite right now, according to these odds makers that send us information. And so that's a huge favorite, but it's not impossible. I mean, Tua lost at the end to Kyler Murray last year. I think basically, well, Joe's got to stay healthy, obviously. He's got to continue to be, you don't want to miss the last three games of the season or something like that, of the postseason, like Tua did. Tua's off the board, basically, at this point. And I think he just needs to keep playing at a reasonably high level, which, I mean, is for him, which is amazing, because we are talking about LSU quarterbacks in a historical context. Throwing for 300 yards a game and some touchdowns. If he doesn't have like a 3 or 4 interception game against Georgia in the SEC championship game, I think he's going to win it. But that was Tua's downfall last year. They pulled him, and they had to bring Jalen Hurts off the bench to win the game against Georgia. And a lot of voters turned on him. And I think that's the one really big hurdle for Joe at this point, because Georgia does have a great defense. But if he keeps playing, you know, reasonably close to where he's playing now, I just don't think anybody can touch him.
I'll get your two cents on Dave Aranda's defense and some of the, I guess, the not-so-silent minority that's up in arms right now, that this guy LSU's paying $2.5 million to. Boy, that unit looks a little soft. Your two cents.
Yes, it does. But I'm not that I'm some great football expert, but I wrote before the season that if you want the kind of offense that they say they're going to have, and, of course, going into the season, we still had to see it. You know, with Burrow saying we're going to score 40, 50, 60 points a game. I think everyone remembers that quote. He brought it up again the other day. That was going to stress the defense some. It was not going to – it's hard to be, you know, that, you know, giving up 10 points a game defense and less than 300 yards a game and have an offense that can score in a minute and a half and do it, you know, multiple times a game. So I think there was going to be some of that trade-off anyway, but – yeah, you've seen some, you know, because they've given up, everybody's pointed to the fact they've given up over 30 points four times this year. Slightly a bit of a misnomer that the two of the touchdowns that they gave up at Vanderbilt were defensive touchdowns for Vandy. They have not played up to their standards. I don't think Grant Delpit's played up to his standards all year. Now he's got a bad ankle. I don't think Kelavon Chaisson's played up to his standards this year. I think, losing Todd Harris was a bigger blow than anyone thought at safety. I think Michael Divinity being gone, and they said maybe if they make it to the national championship game, he could be back then, but that doesn't help. So they've taken some blows. And I think Saturday, though, was a little bit of a – it was like a tale of two halves. You know, the LSU came out, didn't look hungover at all from the Alabama win. They're blowing Ole Miss's doors off 28-0, and I think they just got to a point where they just lost that mental edge. It's like, let's just get home from here. And they're running up against a novel kind of offensive scheme and a team that has played hard. You know, you give Ole Miss credit. They have not stopped playing hard all season, even though they're 4-7 now. And I think that cost LSU. But it's a problem. And I'm going to write about this again for Saturday, that, you know, for game day, that, you know, you look back at the last 10 years, not many, most of the teams have won the national championship. They're up there in the top 10, 15 in total defense. Only outlier was Auburn in 2010 with Cam Newton. And I think you have a similar team with LSU in terms of offensive productivity to what Auburn was that year with him. I'm not saying they're the same quarterback, Ian Burrow, but I think that, you know, that there is a similarity there in terms of offensive production. Will that be enough to carry LSU? I don't know. But I don't think they're going to, you know, Ogeron's talking about making fixes and stuff like that. I think by this point in the season, you are who you are. And I expect to play better the next 2 weeks with a little more intensity and effort. But they're going to have to bring some defense against Georgia in the SEC championship game because those guys have a really good defense.
Scott, one more while we've got you. How does this season so far compare to the ones you covered in 03, 07, and even 11 when it didn't end in the championship?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the LSU's offense just skews everything, and the defense too, like we were just talking about, really. I mean, the 03 team had a tremendous defense. 07's defense was pretty good, though they kind of started to slack up a little bit later in the season, and 11 was obviously a great defense. They played that 9-6 game with Alabama. It's been nothing quite like it, and I you're looking at such a record-setting prolific offense, such a record-setting quarterback. You know, he needs less than 600 yards and 7 touchdown passes to break the SEC single-season records for yardage and touchdowns in a season. I mean, this is an LSU quarterback we're talking about. You know, a school that averaged, the last 10 years, averaged about 200 yards a game passing. So it's been nothing like you've ever seen. I do think this is a long way to go, but if they can manage to get through it and win the national championship, you'd have to say this would be the best team LSU ever in LSU, even with some of the defensive deficiencies they have, because there are stars on the defense, no doubt.
It's a mouthful, but I don't think you're wrong. And I appreciate the time today, Scott. Thanks for hopping aboard. Have a great week. We'll catch up soon.
Well, thank you for allowing me to give real long-winded answers. I appreciate it.
It's great to have him back. Scott Rabelais, sports columnist with The Advocate. And before we hit our next break, he said something there that I've alluded to on the show. And nobody wants to start talking historical plays yet. I get that. I'm cool with that. I can do that. That's part of my job. And so what I would tell you, I think this team is starting to trend up there toward 03 and 11. They're already better than 07. 03 and 11 are already better than 7. So sorry to Jacob Hester, Matt Flynn, all those guys that led a spirited two-loss 2007 team to a championship. I'm not denigrating them, but if I get to be honest and play the eyeball test, which is big these days, then yeah, 11's the best LSU football team I've ever seen. They just ran into the best Alabama football team during my lifetime. That's the issue. Seriously. That 03 team, they played some very good squads. That was a really good 03 Georgia team that they beat not once but twice in Baton Rouge and Atlanta. It was a really good Oklahoma team with Jason White that they beat January 4, 2004. But, man, that 2011 Alabama team was something. It's the only thing that's, I think, kept that 11 team from being the number one, maybe in everybody's eyes. They are in my eyes as far as the eyeball test. This one's got a chance to be up there, even if they're not quite as well-rounded. All right, halfway home in our 5 o'clock hour. We're going to return with Trevor Beggy. Excited to have him aboard, junior wide receiver from McNeese State and one of St. Thomas More's finest over the last decade. Don't go anywhere. After a brief timeout, we've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Today, but
one of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in, and our next guest, very famous in Cajun country. As we go from one good guest to a great one, we're going to welcome aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline, junior wide receiver for McNeese State. And right now he leads the Cowboys in touchdown receptions with 9 to go with 50 catches, 722 yards in his junior season. Of course, his former STM Cougar, Trevor Beggy. Trevor, welcome back in. How are you today?
What's going on, Mr. Ben? It's good to be back on the air. It's been a while, but good to talk to you again.
It's great to have you here, and I want you to take all of us through the progression. From last year as a sophomore, where you played well, made 4 starts, got to the end zone 3 times. Already this year, I mentioned 9 trips to the end zone. How did you get from that spot to where you're at now?
That was kind of funny. Yeah, like you said, I played 4 games last year and had a couple touchdowns and I did a couple good things.
But with us getting this new coaching staff this year, basically all everything that I did last year went to basically was nothing. You know, the coaches kind of all looked at us from basically ground up, ground zero. They didn't really care about what we did last year. They wanted to get a good grade, a good eye test on us from this year. And I just really went to work in fall camp. I had a really good fall camp. They really started to trust me, and obviously I'm reaping the benefits now. I'll be honest with you, I didn't really think I'd be doing this year. You know, I worked really hard, but I just didn't think, you know, I'd have this much good of a year. So I'm just blessed to be in this spot, but just continuing to work hard, man.
And the combination of you along with Cyron Sutton has been deadly in the Southland Conference. Is that kind of a friendly competition between the two of you? How do you work together and bounce off one another?
Yeah, no, me and Cyron we were actually roommates my freshman year when we first got on campus here at McGee's. So we've had a good connection all since we've been here. And, you know, Cyron's obviously, he's the leader. He's got 83 yards to 1,000-yard receiver. So I just have fun playing off of him. It's kind of like me and Griffin Abear did when we were at STM. You know, he played off of me, I played off of him. So we're just having fun, man. We're really not even trying to worry about the records or anything like that or touchdowns. We just like to both see us both having success, and we're just having fun with it.
Trevor Beggy, our guest, playing for the 6-5 McNeese State Cowboys. They've got one ball game left in the regular season. They'll be at Lamar coming up this Saturday. Take me back to last week. I know the result wasn't what you wanted, a loss at Nichols, but you had a good ball game, and along with quarterback Cody Ogeron, this offense continues to roll for the Cowboys.
Yeah, well, it obviously didn't go how we wanted to, but Nichols has a good ball club. They've got Chase 4K leading their way, and with that other good D-line that's starting to rush. You know, it's a tough team to play, but we're making strides. Cody Ogeron's had an unbelievable year. Not many people thought he was going to do what he was going to be able to do this year. And it's just exciting to see, you know, the offense starting to finally pick it up again. And, you know, next year we have me, Cyron, and Cody Ogeron coming back. So there's a bright future ahead for us. And I just can't wait to continue it this weekend and just keep everything going.
All right, so tell me the truth. Has Cody's chest puffed out just a little bit more this season with Papa Ed and LSU off to an undefeated start?
Oh, man, he's walking around real high, real confident right now. But he knows that, you know, obviously the target's on their back now, but just like his dad, you know, he remains humble. He's blessed, you know, with everything that's coming to him. But he knows that, you know, the Tigers have a long way to go. But, no, he's definitely happy right now, and I'm very happy for him, too. Coach Joe is a good guy. I met him a couple times. He's come to a lot of our games, down-to-earth guy, and I wish him the best of success.
Trevor, you had an opportunity to play up at Oklahoma State earlier this year. What was that like, the trip to Stillwater, the atmosphere, all of it?
It was crazy, man. It was it was big-time football. You know, Big 12, didn't really get much bigger than that. Maybe SEC, you know, Big 10, too big, too. But it was awesome, man. You know, to see Coach Mike Gundy, the coach over there with his thumb and hair, doing all that. And, you know, it's just big-time football. The crowd was crazy. And I think I had, like, 5 catches for 70 yards. I had a chance to score, but I got down at the 1, so that's kind of eating me alive still to this day. But it was just an awesome experience. And, it was a really cool deal.
Trevor Beggy, our guest for another few moments, a fierce competitor, as you can hear, and a former STM Cougar. I'm going to talk about your alma mater here in a moment. But you mentioned the first year of this new coaching regime. You and I previewed this when we were at the Hyatt Regency in New Orleans before the Cougars in the Dome last year. At that point, yep. Trevor, you were just looking ahead to Sterling Gilbert. What's it been like 11 games in and one offseason in?
It's exciting. Obviously, I still think we have a lot more to put in, which is really exciting. I think we're just showing a glimpse right now. You know, obviously, when you get a new coach, especially a new offensive coach, and you implement a new offense, it's going to take a while for it to kind of click. And I think the first 4 or 5 games, we really weren't clicking that well. You know, we're still trying to learn it. But obviously, we're starting the last couple of 6 games, we're starting to pick up steam. So I think next year, once it's fully in and everybody's really accustomed to everybody, I think we're going to roll. We're going to pick up from the start. And our numbers are going to be a lot better. But it's been smooth sailing with the new coach. I absolutely love him. And I'm just blessed to be a part of the team, honestly.
All right, you mentioned numbers. I'm going to throw some more digits out there. 20 total touchdowns in your senior season, I should say, for the STM Cougars. That broke a school record. How much pride do you take in that, Trevor?
I take a lot of pride in it. Obviously, coming from STM, you know, there's a lot of big-time players that have come through there. And just to even be on any type of list at STM is such a big honor. Coach Lance Strother is really one of the best coaches over there. Coach Savoy, Coach Hightower, you know, just to be able to play, just to say I played at that school, to be a part of a couple records here or there. But I'm sure a bunch of people have already broken those already. I mean, they got Jack Besh now breaking every single record. I told him to slow down a little bit. You know, he's taking all my shine over there. But no, man, it's good. I'm just happy to see that they're continuing success that they have. You know, they're really not about the players, so the coaches over there. They can turn anybody into anything, you know. So I'm just excited that SDM's continuing their success like I thought they would.
Trevor, between you, maybe guys like Tiger Besh, sometimes the best SDM Cougar receivers of late haven't always been, I guess, the prototype, maybe a little undersized. And then you just mentioned Jack Besh. Did they build that cat in a lab?
Dude, he is unbelievable. I mean, every time I saw him, I went to the North Vermillion game this past week. I stayed for only a little bit, but I got next to him and I was like, dude, you are big, man. And he's just, like I said, I called Coach Trevor a couple weeks ago and I told him, I said, Jack Besh is doing it different than anybody has ever done it. You know, like you said, his body type is like no one we've ever seen. Maybe Griffin Hebert, but Griffin Hebert wasn't as thick as he was. I mean, he's just dominating people. Like, he's dominating cornerbacks like we've never seen. And he's catching the ball and running the for touchdowns like me and Tiger did. So I told Coach that he might be the best to ever go through if he keeps doing what he's doing. He's a special talent, and I'm really excited to see what he can do the rest of this year and then his first senior year.
We're finishing up with Trevor Beggy. Of course, coming up two nights from tonight, SDM playing host to Evangel. That's kind of a quirky 1-9 quarterfinal matchup. That's a really good Evangel team. What do you think about the Cougars taking on a power from up north?
Yeah, when I saw that they were playing Evangel, it kind of brought back memories to when we used to battle them every season. Evangel's a good team. I know SDM is not taking them lightly, coming from our playoff experience with them. It's gonna be an interesting game. I heard Evangel's coming up hot as of lately, so I'm very interested to see that. But I know SDM's gonna become prepared, and it's tough to play SDM at home, especially in the playoffs. So I'm expecting a good game, but I'm expecting the Cougars to come out on top.
Trevor, this was awesome. It's great to have you back aboard the program, talking throughout Acadiana. Good luck this weekend at Lamar. Continued success. I know we'll talk again soon.
Yes, sir. I'm glad we got to get back on the air. I appreciate everything you've done for me, and I look forward to getting back on the air, like you said.
There you go. Trevor Beggy. And it doesn't get a lot better than that. Success here in the Hub City. Takes it over to Lake Chuck. And, you know, I love the humility. I mean, he even tells you there, I didn't expect I would be doing this year what I'm actually doing this year. And the numbers are pretty crazy. You know, I mean, 50 catches in a college football season, I don't care who you are and what level you're playing at, that's putting up numbers and that's doing work. And so a lot of interesting connections. Trevor, of course, catching balls, as he mentioned, for Cody Ogeron. That would be Ed's son. He's playing right now over at McNeese. So many connections to this area. And he gets back to watch the Cougars when he can. I know a couple of weeks ago, the Cowboys were on a bye. Sounds like he was in to take in STM North Vermillion from Cougar Stadium. So, again, our thanks to Trevor Beggy. And then the good folks over at McNeese State, Matthew Bonnet and company, for hooking us up with that great interview. We're going to hook you up one final time. On the other side of this break, we throw shade. Typically, I do that a little earlier in the 5 o'clock hour. We have saved maybe not the best for last, because we did just have Scott Rabelais and Trevor Beggy. But we've got the awfully good coming up next, and then we chase that with Five Guys Stories and Lies from 6 until 8. A great afternoon, set to turn into a great evening here in Acadiana. So stick with us. After a brief timeout, we've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports coming at you on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Just rolling on a hump day, and how else would you like your last two segments, especially the one we just came out of? I want to thank Trevor Beggy again. It's a pleasure catching up with a young man that's got that much, I don't know, I'll call it stage presence. He's also got some presence in between the lines when the lights come on. Having a great season for McNeese State. So again, a joy to catch up with a local kid that's made good from this area. He's got a lot of support as well. How do I know that? My phone has been blowing up through our last break. So enough of that. Just wanted to make sure I lobbed a few more bouquets. Been trying to line that interview up for a few more weeks. But apparently, I had to let Trevor fit in another six catches, 67 yards, and a score at Nichols last weekend. I usually give you a daily reminder, a PSA locally. I do those things typically around 5:30, but due to a guest that we're able to squeeze in, we squeeze the shade to our final act in this Hump Day Wednesday, November 20th edition of B2BS. And a lot of times, Clint, I don't mind telling you, our listeners either, I'm pretty definitive. You could probably tell when we get to this portion of the show, I have something set in my sights. I recognize that another athlete or coach has had something or someone set in their sights, and then I relay the message to you. I take my stance. This one's a bit ambiguous, but I think it still fits the segment. So without any further ado, I will remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com, and before this holiday season, start to let the ideas settle in. That the standing seam metal awnings, the customized patio covers with the cypress accents would look perfect in your backyard. But know that that's just the tip of the iceberg. The pros at Patio Center, and it starts with Mark at the top, will sit down with you, create a vision, and then customize it to your liking. And then before you know it, before the next spring and summer sessions hit South Louisiana, you're going to have the best patio on your block, bar none. They are the kings of customization. And remember, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Boy, oh boy, is this Myles Garrett thing far from done. And I suppose we knew that, but this one today reminds me of the MLB Astros shade that we chunked yesterday. And here's the tie-in and the correlation. I think that yesterday's words from Rob Manfred, MLB commissioner, about the fact that he's got unilateral authority to basically crush the Astros franchise in their face, that was a sobering reminder that there's still an active investigation and that this thing is ongoing. And it could be bad. We don't know how bad, but we just know it's ongoing. Today with Myles Garrett and a meeting that he and his representation had as part of a meeting that the NFLPA was also in with the NFL league officials this morning in New York as part of that huge collective meeting to discuss the fiasco last Thursday night between Myles Garrett, Mason Rudolph, the Browns, and the Steelers. Within the confines of that meeting, what came out of it is a reminder that this thing also is nowhere near done. And so part of my, I used the word ambiguous earlier, part of the ambiguity of today's shade is that we just sometimes need to be reminded that there is room for gray. It's not always black or white. We see something, we want to throw the book at someone or something, and then the court of public opinion has spoke, and so boom, snap your fingers, that's it. It's done. That person is done. Kick him out of the league. Don't let him come back. And then sometimes these things start to get walked back. I don't know for sure that that happened today, but I'll throw a little bit of shade at the way our society works, right? You're always guilty before proven innocent, even when, of course, there is video evidence like there is here. Today was a reminder that there's going to be a process in this. And yes, the NFL has indefinitely suspended Myles Garrett for a period that will last at least the duration of this regular season, which is six more games. But today in that meeting in the Big Apple, Garrett, the NFLPA, and his representation used a precedent-based argument that quite simply said the worst punishment any player has ever received for a similar incident was Antonio Smith of the Houston Texans. He was suspended, and I had forgotten about this, Clint. Smith was suspended two preseason games and one regular season game back in 2013 for swinging his helmet at then-Dolphins O-lineman Richie Incognito, who now, I believe, is with the Oakland Raiders. I completely had forgotten about that. I whiffed on it in my mind. I thought the closest thing we had seen the last Thursday night with Garrett and Rudolph was maybe Albert Haynesworth trying to stomp out somebody's neck, or maybe Kyle Turley taking a helmet off and throwing it across the field. And so Garrett and his representation, the NFLPA again, are contending that this is unprecedented punishment. And the word they used is excessive, right, under the precedent established by Smith's suspension, especially, as Garrett and his side pointed out, especially because Smith of the Houston Texans 6 years ago missed only one game check since players aren't paid for preseason games. How interesting is that? And so this Myles Garrett thing, again, it's going to continue to evolve, maybe devolve, but I think it's still a moving target. The other thing that came out of this, CD, a representative of Maurice Pouncey, Steelers offensive lineman, he joined the hearing, and technically it was yesterday, Pouncey's representation was on, coming out in support, obviously, of their client. He's been suspended three games, and a source has told the mothership the Steelers believe that Pouncey received a three-game ban in order to avoid him playing in the Week 13 rematch, Browns versus Steelers. I'm not sure that's actually a horrible idea, if that's what the NFL had in mind, but it's interesting, and if that's at the root of that, well, then shade goes to the NFL. They're trying to break these guys up, but you can't throw out a willy-nilly number, and today, yesterday afternoon, was a reminder of that. There are precedent on things, and the NFL might just have to answer to those. So I know it's a sticky way to throw some shade, but sometimes, Clint, we just got to get in where we fit in.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
It's complicated. I know. And it wouldn't have been as complicated 15 years ago. Way back when, before Twitter, you know, the advent and explosion of Facebook, maybe 20 years ago is a better example. We all just would have looked at this. We'd have learned about it, you know, a day or two later about some of these things in New York, the meetings. We wouldn't have been watching it over and over on loop on social media. But we throw the book at people awfully early, and I'm not sure this book needs to be closed just yet. All right, our show has come to a close, or just about, so let me thank our guest on a hump day. Great time. Talking LSU basketball with Cody Warsham in the 4 o'clock hour, and back-to-back in this hour, you heard from Scott Rabelais of The Advocate, LSU football, the college football playoff, as well as former STM Cougar and McNeese State wide receiver Trevor Beggy. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll be out live at the Tap Room River Ranch. Big show, Gordy Rush, Blaine Viator, and a lot more. But as for now, it's time for Five Guys, Stories, and Lies. So Clint and I will close up shop. Thanks for joining Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.